several levels of government, as well as to universities around the world, that this is something that we have to take very seriously, to make it a priority, to share best practices about what we're doing, and to develop new and innovative ways that we can proactively not only build awareness around the situation, but also build new strategies and new applications that really might save lives in the long term.
You talk about strategies and initiatives, but this is very personal for you as well. Why did you decide to tell people about your own struggles with mental health?
Well, let me just first fill in some of the people who might not know about my story. You know, I've talked in a number of different circles about my childhood, my adolescence, and young adulthood. And so this is very personal to me because I have had my own mental health challenges. I'm quite well now over the past few decades. But when I was 14 years old, I not only ideated about taking my own life, I actually attempted to take my own life. It's something that, unfortunately, I didn't address for the longest time. And I attempted to take my own life once again as an adult, young adult. And so, fortunately, at that juncture, friends of mine encouraged me to actually seek the professional help that I needed. I went to a specialized facility in Baltimore, Maryland, and I was diagnosed and went through quite a long period of psychotherapy and received medication, and over a period of years have reached the stage where I'm very well and high functioning. And so I want that for all of the students and all individuals, and it's not just young adults. These sorts of situations will affect people later in life as well. And so I wanted to talk about it so that hopefully we can end the stigma, so that as a society we can do all that we can to support individuals that need help, and also to hopefully send the message that there's hope, and that if you embrace the situation and seek the help that you need early enough, as you know, there are stages, four stages of severity of mental health issues, and the sooner you can actually address those and get the help that you need, the more likely it is that you can stay out of harm's way and get better.
We'd like to take your questions throughout this half hour, and if you would like to reach out to us and offer questions or make comments that we can put to our two guests today, please feel welcome to do so. Cheryl, as you were listening to Santa, what were you thinking about?
Well, first of all, I really want to commend you, Santa, for sharing your experience. I think that so many students do feel very isolated, and they don't feel like they can share what's going on with them in terms of their struggles. I mean, I think a couple of things are important to highlight. First of all, there are significant new challenges that students do experience. And they also put very, very high expectations on themselves. There's a lot of vested interest in what they're doing. They feel there's a lot at stake. When there are setbacks, when they don't feel like they're making the grade that they want, when they feel like they're getting behind, perhaps it can be very difficult to be sort of self-compassionate at that point and just appreciate that this is a new environment. There are a lot of new challenges. It's normal that you don't necessarily get it right the first time. It's normal that it's a gradual process of developing competency and skill. And I think that the other thing that plays out is, again, going back to just feeling very isolated with all of these feelings and feeling unable to reach out as a result. So I think these are the things that we really need to take into consideration when we're thinking about supporting students. In terms of the resources that we provide and how we provide them, as well as the kind of campus community that we're trying to create in terms of, again, supporting students.
I just want to chime in and say that I gave a TED Talk a few days ago, and your words about that they feel very alone and isolated. The theme of the TED Talk, there were several speakers, was Imagine. And you know the song by John Lennon, Imagine All the People, we're not the only one. And so getting that message across to someone who might be anxious or might not be going to classes, and they're in the dorm room by themselves, feeling that they're the only one. That I was there, and so it's really, really helpful for students to know that they're not the only one.
We just received our first question here for you, Professor Ono. We need more counselors. Is this being looked into? This is something we hear a lot from students.
Absolutely, and some may know that last year, in my first year at UBC, we made an investment of $2.5 million, knowing that the need is growing. That's something that's happening across the province, across the nation, around the world. Right now, it's quite common that there are not enough counselors at almost all of the universities. Just yesterday, I had a meeting of about six individuals across UBC talking about how we can organize ourselves to provide even more support. So what we've done in this year is just the start. We are actively talking about what more we can do to support our students.
And I know this is something that you're trying to deal with at Counseling Services to make sure to prioritize. So if someone is in a particular kind of jeopardy, you're able to see them and organize. How are you managing that?
Yes, absolutely. So one of our top priorities is really that access point, so that no matter what a student's dealing with, they're not needing to wait. That's really important on a number of different levels. Santa, as you're mentioning, in terms of the levels, if a student is feeling like they're needing some support and it's early on in sort of experiencing difficulty, if we can get them connected, in the right way soon, then that's really critical. So we don't want them to wait. The student who's in crisis, who's experiencing some more serious difficulties, it's critical that we're able to see them right away. So that is really important. Part of the $2.5 million investment went toward establishing a new team of professionals that are dedicated to providing that first point of contact. And so we've been able to really create a much more timely, readily accessible first sort of assessment and consultation so that we connect the students to care in the best possible way.
Nilab, thank you very much for that question. It's certainly one that we hear about a lot from students is the need for more counseling.
Let me just chime in really quickly. That approach is proving to be very effective. It's not just a matter of more resource. We will do that, but a smart use of resource. And so whether you're looking at Britain and the NHS Trust, they're actually investing more in free talk therapy, and then identifying, screening those people who actually need to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So that kind of education of peers and of staff in residence halls is known to be very effective. There's a whole program called MHFA, Mental Health First Aid. And so the more we can actually get that kind of knowledge throughout the community so that peers and staff members and professors are aware of what to look for, how to speak to students that appear to be at risk, and when to refer, that can be very impactful.
Okay. Next question comes from Mohammed. New students from different cultures might have a difficult time starting their new life here. What does the university do specifically to help them?
Yes, we really are very sensitive to the needs of new students and just appreciative that students come from far away at times, and even students who are coming from elsewhere in the Lower Mainland, elsewhere in Canada, but certainly our international student population. And we have a tremendous sort of focus and a number of ways in which we're trying to really prepare them well for university. The Jumpstart program is an important program in this regard, so that they can really feel like they have a good orientation to resources and that they feel like they're getting a stronger, more solid footing before they actually even start their academic program. So that's really important. We also work very closely with International Student Services to make sure that we're understanding what the concerns are that students are bringing, and that our staff are sensitive to those concerns. Also that we're able to identify students who are in need and streamline their access to services is another really important element of that. Go ahead.
One of the reasons that I have spoken up is that it's not very common for someone who's Asian to talk about their challenges. And I think...
Is it cultural?
There's a cultural barrier, and there's really enhanced shame about talking about it. So stigma is really amplified several-fold in certain ethnicities, in certain cultures, in certain nations. And it, I think, is even more important that we have a strategy where a diverse set of individuals and voices talk about it so that we address those differences, especially in international students, and also in LGBTQ, in that population as well. They are students that are particularly at risk because there are issues with identity, but also acceptance and inclusion. So the more people that we have talking about what they've been through and what would be helpful, I think that that's a very important approach.
We changed pronoun use at our school a few years ago, and we had a student actually report back and say that that actually helped this person to feel welcome in the community. That simple, tiny change, his, her, their, made all the difference in the world. How do we educate people who are in classrooms to use the language that allows students to see themselves and feel welcome into these spaces?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's all part of, I think, building broader capacity on campus across, you know, faculty and staff, as well as student leader groups. I think that the more that we're really supporting greater understanding, as well as supporting greater ability, skill, comfort to be able to reach out if you're noticing somebody who's struggling. Just greater sensitivity across the board in terms of unique needs of students across multiple dimensions of diversity. That's just a gradual, ongoing kind of building of capacity in our community that we really need to stay focused on.
I should say that, you know, one of the most important things I've found is to listen to the students, because they're the ones who know what will be effective and what will not be effective. And if a staff member or an administrator, the last person who should be thinking about this is the president of the university, thinks about how to connect with students without listening to students, then we're likely to fail. And so many of the innovations that are occurring across the higher education landscape have been suggested by students. So the more we speak with students and say, what would be effective? How should we interrelate and connect? That would make a difference. That's important.
We've got one here from IWAS. How can we promote students to open up and talk about their mental health issues? We touched on this earlier, the notion of relationships. How do we create relationships with people so that they feel welcome to share?
Yeah, and I think that that can be supported on multiple levels. I think part of it is just the, you know, being open, you know, whether it's, you know, creating opportunities for conversations on campus. So that people don't feel like these issues are somehow sort of under the table, and so, you know, there, whether it's you know, through health education outreach and programming on that level, you know, informal learning opportunities, and we have a very vibrant student mental health network on campus composed of multiple student groups who are very interested in student mental health. And they are, you know, a real important resource for campus and the dialogue that occurs there. So I think that the other point I would make there too is that in terms of the actual supports and resources that are available, really widening those. And that's a focus that we've taken over the last couple of years now, where the support that's available isn't narrowly focused on individual counseling, but there are a wide range of opportunities for accessing support, and they may include online, you know, phone. They could be, you know, group focused. They could be individual, so that students feel like they have options available to them.
Right.
There's a lot of programs that are underway that are incredibly helpful. People may not know that if you type in hashtag depression on Instagram, that immediately pops up. Hotline,
phone number, resources.
What can we do? Things,
yep,
like that. Same thing with Facebook. And so the more we use and build that into our platforms at UBC and other educational institutions, the better. I think institutions such as Bell Canada, the Let's Talk campaign, people I think are familiar with that. Millions of interactions have occurred because of that. The more we build awareness and are actively involved, I think That's helpful. I think it's also important, though, to educate people on how to connect with at-risk youth. Often, if you say something, I know what it feels like, or come out with a response which is somewhat judgmental,
or trite,
it'll actually close the door. and so that's why one of the things that I hope to do is to really roll out a comprehensive strategy where the principles of mental health first aid, if it's that or some other program, that's broadly known by as many people as possible.
One resource is right here on campus at students.ubc.ca/counseling. There you can go to get access to any number of resources that are on campus. And it is a continuum, so participating in things that are happening around the campus, getting involved with groups and programs is another way. This question just comes to us from Nick. Does UBC engage with parents' guardians, especially first-year students, around pressures and stress of university life and thinking about ways to support their family members?
Yes, we actually do oftentimes having the opportunity to support family members and guardians. And in some cases, it's a matter of really, conversations around, what it is that they're experiencing, and then, thinking about what their particular needs might be and helping connect them to resources that would support them. But in some cases, it's really just about hearing their concerns, and knowing that their concerns are being received, and that they have an opportunity to provide their son or daughter with some information about resources that are available, encouraging them to do that. Sometimes it's a bit of a coaching conversation around how do you talk to your son or daughter about these things, and. And so, they are obviously an incredibly important, part of the equation in terms of supporting students. So we want to support them to really be part of that support network.
But it can be tricky because there's a privacy question.
Yes, absolutely.
And many of our students are adults when they walk in, and so they may or may not want people who are their guardians or family members to know. So it's a bit of a dance.
It is. And I'll just say one other thing about that. So when we have conversations with parents, we don't share whether or not their son or daughter has been, seeing anybody or any service in our center. And really, it's just about, at that point in time, we're there to just have a conversation with them about what it is that they're experiencing. And oftentimes, it's just really comforting to know that they've been able to share that. What we do, however, is we do note that, and so that if their son or daughter does come into our center, we're able to, have that other sort of bit of information that really helps to support the counselor to support them.
But I do think the spirit of the question, I think I understand, is that I think the individual is asking, is that an opportunity? And I think it is possible for us, respecting all the principles that have been discussed, to do more in proactively in terms of engaging with all parents about what to do if they notice a change in behavior, what the resources are on campus. Sometimes parents will directly contact me, and I certainly am not the right person to provide the support or guidance, and I will refer, because often when they approach me, the situation is relatively serious. But I welcome those contacts. What I will do is refer. But I think that the spirit of the question is that we can probably do even more in terms of proactively partnering with parents and supporting students.
All right. Melanie writes to say, what is the proportion of undergraduate and graduate students asking for help? Do we have statistics on that?
Yes, actually, the proportion of graduate students who come to our center are actually proportionate to their population. So we're seeing about what we would expect in terms of the students who actually seek services in our area.
Which tells you?
Well, I mean, I think that we're happy about that on one level, in that we are obviously graduate students are also seeking support. I think the other thing, however, is we've been in touch over the last term, working more closely with graduate and postdoctoral studies in particular, to really look at how we can enhance services for graduate students, because they do have very unique needs. But I think overall what it says is that both graduate and undergraduate students have very real need for support. They have different experiences, different challenges, but it's important to make sure that there is good support for both.
Let me say that having been both an undergraduate and a graduate student, that I'm particularly sensitive to the differences in undergraduate and graduate student experience.
Such a different experience.
Graduate students are often very isolated by definition. They're tucked away in the laboratory alone. They have a situation where they have a supervisor that has enormous power over their future. And sometimes that goes well, sometimes it doesn't go well. The great thing is that as we speak at the Alumni Center, there's a group of individuals that are thinking about reimagining the PhD experience and thinking about the stresses that accompany not only the unique environment of a graduate student, but also the stresses about their career prospects and how to work with students proactively so that they are trained and that they are ready for the diversity of opportunities that exist that may not be traditional ones. And so if we address some of those things and think about how to better support students, that might also be helpful.
All right. We just received this one from Janaya. I apologize if I'm mistakenly pronouncing your name. What are the barriers to getting a reading break in term one? A break would immensely help students with their mental health, well-being, and stress. October and November, often a hard time when many students struggle with mental health, and it's gray outside. This is a good idea. So?
I would love that kind of situation. This is one thing that the president and vice chancellor cannot do on his or her own.
What? You don't have a magic wand?
Cannot do that. It's something which is controlled by the faculty senates, and there are two faculty senates at UBC. I can say that it's under conversation right now, but there's a committee, and then it has to come to the full faculty senate, and I will make sure it stays on the agenda. And so that's where we are now, but it's something, unfortunately, I can't do on my own.
What do you think, Cheryl? Think that might take the edge off a bit?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think we've had actually the question from students themselves and from the AMS and wondering about the impact that might make. I mean, one of the things that the AMS has asked our office is, when are the busy times? When are the most demanding times? And when, therefore, could students really use a break? And actually, we see the most students and the most demands in October, November, and then the second most the busy time is February, March.
And my office is the same. People really want to come and connect at those times because that's when they're feeling the squeeze. So interesting. Lily, how can UBC instructors accommodate to be more sensitive towards students struggling with their mental health? What type of training is being done?
You want to start? I can respond.
Yeah. Sure. I think this is an ongoing priority. Just in terms of building that, increased awareness, compassion, understanding. I think it goes to the depths of the expectations that we have for students and then what they internalize and the messages that we provide students with. I think that we can have the very best intentions at heart, but if how we're structuring our programs, if we're unintentionally sort of pitting them up against some very serious deadlines without kind of a sense of this is an experience of gradual competency development, and that it's normal that that is a gradual process and that grades won't necessarily be at the very top in the very beginning, so that I think there's a lot that we can be thinking about in terms of the expectations that we set and then how that filters through in terms of how we structure the programs. But I think for each individual faculty member to really be developing that sort of enhanced capacity to be able to have those conversations with students in a sensitive way.
Right, thank you.
What I'd say is that sort of my dream about what we're gonna be able to accomplish in the next couple of years, in the near term, is that we have new faculty coming in every year, and we have an orientation that could be beefed up, and we could have a module with a curriculum, a mini curriculum, and with collateral materials, maybe a podcast. And so we have about 5,500 faculty on this campus alone, and so that's quite a few, and there's turnover every single year. So I think it should be integrated into the orientation of new faculty, number one. And number two, we should make it available to current faculty who may not have had experienced any training at all, So that's something that I'm going to talk to the provost and deans about in the near term and try to develop something this year.
I believe that there's all kinds of services available to faculty to learn these things, but it's voluntary. So maybe moving toward a more mandatory, this is part of the job, and bringing people on board in that way might be helpful as well. Okay, we have time for probably one, maybe two last questions. This one from Sasha. Counseling is obviously a wonderful way to address mental health, but does UBC explore other possibilities to address work on mental health issues on campus?
Yes, and I'm not sure whether the question is about the other range of services.
Might be a bit of both. It looks like the other ways to support mental health and well-being other than counseling.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it's important to highlight the student mental health and well-being strategy, which is a systems approach, really looking at three tiers of intervention. The counseling itself is really only on one level. And what the approach really does also look at is the level of building skill and capacity proactively, and being able to identify and connect students to resources early on, as early as possible. And then kind of on another tier, it's about looking at the entire campus community. It's culture, it's structure, the environment, and how conducive is it to building a supportive campus community that will help students to thrive. So all of those levels are important, and whatever you do in each given level is going to really complement the whole, but we need to be paying attention on all levels.
So let me talk about some things that we're doing
very quickly
with respect to that. One is that, as you know, we're starting to invest in the whole wellness initiative. We know that
as part of the strategic plan, even it's built right in now.
Even before that, but we know that there's not sufficient recreational space for students, and so if you look at the old sub, it's under renovation right now, and we are aggressively trying to expand the amount of space for recreation. Second thing is, you probably noticed that there's all kinds of activities throughout the entire calendar of the year meant to build a sense of community. The more we can build community, I think the more we can be. Support that approach to dealing with mental health.
Santa and Cheryl, thank you both very much for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Great wisdom to share with students. And if you do need to get access to counseling and services, students.ubc.ca/counseling. There you'll find all kinds of resources. Thanks very much for spending some of your time with us. If you need help, please reach for it.
You have been listening to a conversation.